to the United States Dressage Federation's official podcast. Hello. On the show this week, we hear from Kathy Rouse on what makes a good scribe, and we have two new segments. Our Trainer's Tip features Jane Rodd with advice on how riders warm up, and US Dressage News with Lilo Four explaining the launch of the new USDF FEI certification program, which will take the standard of education for instructors and trainers in the United States through to the highest levels of the sport. Lilo Four is co-chair of the USDF Instructor Training Committee. She is also an FEI five-star judge, and she'll be serving on this summer's Alltech FEI World Equestrian Games in Normandy. And Lilo joins me now to explain the new program. Lilo, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
How did it come about?
Okay, we're having now the national certification going on for about 25 years. I think this year, this coming year, is really our 25th year of anniversary for our certification program. So for the last, really, in the last 10 years, we are talking about, you know, trying to go to the next step up, which is, of course, the international level of certification. And it takes a while to get to that part. You know, we had to go to all our national levels. We added levels to the national levels so that we never lose someone who is interested to go and join this particular certification program and become, in a certain way, a really true, quote, professional. So when we finally realized we have a lot of instructors and certified instructors who really are already qualified to probably go to the FEI level, we started then thinking about, of course, to go up to the next step, which is of the highest degree of training and teaching, which is, of course, the international level. So that is when we started to work on and through and toward the FEI status. And, you know, and this is, of course, the highest level of training, the highest level of teaching, and, you know, and trainers and riders who have trained that particular level are now, we are trying to now pull into the program to help us to get that program started now to this particular step. And, you know, FEI is a very high goal for us, and you know, and so we are trying now to get this program started. The USDF has approved it in this last convention. And so now we are working on, you know, focusing on pulling in our certified instructors who have gone through the certification, our faculty, which is definitely trained to the FEI level. And we are now hopefully continuing on that step. They do not necessarily need to have their national certification. What we're doing is we're making sure that there are applications, of course. They have to have certain criteria to be able to apply for the FEI level certification. So, you know, they have to, for instance, they have to be, you know, having taught people, having taught and trained horses to that level. They have to have a certain percentage at that particular level they have trained their horses to, and then they are able to apply to USDF for the FEI level certification program. They would have to have, say, you know, a certain percentage point, like they have to have certain number of horses trained to that particular level to be able to apply. Like for instance, the intermediate, we have the FEIB level, which will be the pre-St. George and intermediate level. And then we have FEIA level, which is then for the intermediate B2 and Grand Prix. So they have to have 6 scores of 60% or higher and at least 2 horses or more with a combination of the pre-St. George, intermediate. And now, because we have an intermediate level, also the medium FEI level, which is intermediate A, so they have to have about 6 scores for their horses, of at least two or more horses, six scores, and then they have to have two or more students who have received a combined total of six scores also at 60% or higher at that particular level. That's with the FEIB. And then FEIA, which is intermediate two to the Grand Prix, they have to have about six scores of 60% or higher and at least two horses at intermediate two and Grand Prix with a minimum of two scores being at Grand Prix. So, and then they have to have two students, just like in the other step, two students who have received six scores or higher at 60% at intermediate two B or the Grand Prix. So those are the criteria for them then to apply. But they do not need to go necessarily having to go through the whole steps of national certification.
So can you tell us then about the workshops that are being designed now to help candidates that want to prepare for those new certifications?
Okay, we will have the first workshop really this April. So the first workshop will, matter of fact, be at my farm. So, and that's will be the 15th and 16th of April this year. And what we then do is we have, you know, criteria, okay, of course, for the FEI workshop, we have curriculums for riding and teaching. And these curriculums will go through that whole workshop phase. So they come, they have to ride different horses, they have to show their skill on familiar horses. If they have a chance to bring their own, they show their skill on their own horses. And they will then also, of course, have to teach people on FEI horses and show, you know, that they are up to that particular level. The workshop still will be more in a teaching phase, per se. But it will not be like, for instance, in the national levels where you have to, you know, keep on teaching everyone every step of the way. I mean, these are people who are already quite qualified in the FEI training and teaching. So that workshop will just have to show that they can show on unfamiliar horses, that they can show that they're having an understanding of the FEI level and also know about the curriculums for riding and teaching which applies in that workshop. We, you know, we're working and making sure they all know everything about the walk, which is an FEI, then everything which is in the trot exercises, movements to the FEI. They have to know how to prepare horses for pirouettes. They have to know how to prepare horses for tempi changes. I mean, more everything, more in the higher level, and they have to work through that workshop. The workshop is a little more to prepare them and to see for themselves if they are in their own minds and in their own field that they are ready to go through a testing. So that is what the workshop will be doing this time.
And this program, of course, just underlines the commitment the USDF has to raising the standard of training and certification in this country.
Absolutely. What we are trying to do, of course, with these certifications is to come up to the standard of European training, per se. So, you know, they have, Europe, of course, has a certification program for many, many, many decades. And we have it now for the second decade and going up toward the third, which is in a certain way a very young program when you think about how long certification has been going on in Europe. But we have amazing good riders and good trainers here as well. We have good teachers here. And we're trying to, in the tool setting up, these certifications to unify really all our training all over this big country. You know, we have amazing long distances here between, you know, state to state to state. We don't have the professional riding schools, which they have all over Europe, of course. So riders and trainers and teachers here are kind of in their own place and world situated, and the certification is trying really to pull these instructors together, work with each other, learn from each other, and of course raise the standard of training and teaching for that whole country.
Wonderful. Well, thank you very much indeed for explaining this to us, Lilo.
You're most welcome. Thank you very much for having me.
For more details regarding the criteria and application process, or for more information on the USDF Instructor Trainer Program, please visit the website at usdf.org or contact the USDF Education Programs Department at instructorcertification@usdf.org. And now for our new segment on trainers' tips, we're joined by Jane Rodd, who is a certified instructor through fourth level and a member of the program's faculty for training at first level. Jane, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I would like to talk about how riders warm up. I've worked with a lot of riders, especially amateurs, who, because of their financial constraints, often ride on their own without instruction. And one of the things they find the hardest is to warm up in a logical, methodical fashion. And that especially is important when they go to shows, that they have a warm-up that they can trust and that they know works for them and their horse, and that they don't change that when they go to a clinic or a show and they're warming up without any help.
So how would you like riders to just begin that approach?
Well, my tip basically is for a really concrete plan of action that can be personalised to suit each horse and rider partnership. So no matter what level the horse or what level the rider or what stage of training they're at, they can work out a plan following this formula that suits them. Every horse and rider is unique, and I think it's really important that instructors understand that. There is no one plan that works for everybody, and that's why I like this plan, because it's customizable. And the goal is to find methods that work to produce consistent, confidence-building results while following the really classical principles of training. It also applies to the rider. We talk a lot about warming up the horse, but all these steps actually apply to warming up the rider too. And I think that's important for the rider to think about, not just is my horse warmed up, but am I warmed up? Am I physically loose and supple? And am I in the right frame of mind to be asking the horse to do what I need it to do? And depending on the horse and the rider, and depending on the day, you know, some days it's warm, some days it's cold, some days it's windy, some days the horse has had a hard work the day before or gallop around the field and it comes out stiffer than others. Each step might take just minutes for some horses, but might take the whole session for others. You might go into a session where you're warming up and you actually never get to the point where you can actually work the horse to its full potential. So that's also important to realize as you go through this. The key is that the rider at each stage needs to have enough patience to wait until that stage is accomplished, and they need to find a feel that tells them when the horse has actually got to that point. So they need the patience to wait for it to happen and the feel to know when it's happened and when they can move on. So what I advise my riders to do is at each stage they need to do two things. They need to find a personal aid, like an aid memoir that helps them focus on their goal, and they need to find a pattern they can ride to assess whether the horse has reached that goal and whether you have the quality to move to the next stage. Now, when I say stages, I'm talking about the pyramid of training. The pyramid of training begins with rhythm, moves on to relaxation, and up to connection, impulsion, straightness, to flexion. Let's start with the bottom one, and I can use the bottom level to make an example of what I'm talking about. So at the very bottom, before we even start to worry about rhythm and relaxation, on the training scale, we have familiarization and habituation. And I think in this busy world, we and the horses, we're tempted to start without settling. Even if the horse is in a familiar ring, there's going to be things that have changed. You know, there's going to be new equipment in the ring. The weather's going to be different outside the window. Other horses might be turned out or brought back in while you're riding. Things change. And we just need to come in with a plan to just let the horse settle, let ourselves settle before we ask anything of either. So using my aid memoir here, find a personal aid to assist you in focusing on your goal. So an example of that might be to make a conscious effort for you as a rider to look at the environment and to notice absolutely everything. You know, has the ring been dragged? Is there a new set of jump wings in the corner? Is there snow coming off the roof? I'm in Vermont, so lots of snow coming off the roof. And if you notice everything, stage number two, the pattern you might ride, might be to actually show your horse the whole ring as if he'd never seen it before every time you come in. So, you know, you walk into your corners, you walk past the door, you do a change across a diagonal, you ride a pattern so he sees things from both directions. And until you feel that he's had a really good look round and you've settled, you shouldn't move on to the next stage, which is rhythm. So the horse learns about rhythm, about the regularity and energy, performing in a good tempo, and the rider needs to be in harmony. So your aid might be to have some kind of chant or song in your head that you repeat yourself as you're going around the arena that helps you to set that rhythm. And then you may choose a pattern, like a young horse, you may just go round and round the rail. A more advanced horse, you may do a serpentine, where you can monitor whether you can actually keep that rhythm. And then you repeat that at every stage of the training pyramid. You find ways that work for you and your horse to assess relaxation, connection, impulsion, straightness, and collection. So, as I said earlier, the key is for you to have enough patience at every stage to wait until these happen, and then to have a way of testing whether you've actually got the quality you need that helps you feel for that quality. And in any session, you need to be prepared to recognize that that's maybe where you have to stay today. If you're not getting the relaxation, you cannot move on to connection. So be patient and be really honest about what's going on with you and your horse. That way you build confidence and your warm-ups will always be successful.
Thank you very much indeed, Jane, for this very helpful trainer's tip of the week.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
And for our final segment this week, we're joined again by Cathy Rouse, who is a USCF S Judge and L Program faculty member, and she offers advice on what makes a good scribe. Cathy, welcome back to the program.
Well, thanks for having me again, Chris.
Now, being a good scribe is critical to a judge, isn't it?
Yes, it is, and it's also really critical to the show and to the show management. Obviously, without a good scribe, the riders don't get the feedback that they need to get from the judge, and the show really couldn't go on without the scribes and other volunteers that are so valuable. When a scribe agrees to judge a show, they really need to make sure they plan to get to the showgrounds at least 20 minutes ahead of when the show is scheduled to start. You know, rushing in at the last minute doesn't make the show management feel comfortable, and it's a little uncomfortable for the scribe too because they feel rushed. So get there early and check in with the show management to let them know that you're there and to get all the materials that you'll need for the day. Most show managements are going to provide you with the pens, the clipboards, things like that, but a really good scribe often has their own packet of things that they bring along, including a blue or black pen along with extras in case it runs out. You will always need a red pen. Clipboards are often helpful. Having something that will secure down any free paper so that they're not blowing around, like an extra rock or clips or something like that, is often very helpful. And then you want to get to the judging booth with all the materials ahead of time so that you can get things organized. The show management will, of course, provide you with the show program and order of go and the show and all of the tests for that day. But it's really helpful for the scribe and the judge to have you have all those things set out and organized. You know where each packet of things are before you start your day. Personally, I like to have the show program between the scribe and myself because I do always ask the scribe to make sure that they check the number on the horse and the number on the test and also then check it off the show program so that we know if that horse has actually showed up in the ring if any questions arise. For example, a test seems to be lost or something. But you don't want to go with the number in the show program. You always want to look at the number on the horse and make sure then that that is the number of the tests on the test that you're using. And that's a very critical thing to make sure that we get right, to make sure that we're judging the right horse and that the tests get handed in with the right horse's number on it. Scribing also takes quite a bit of energy because you will be writing quite a bit from the judge's comments. And most shows prefer that you do it for the entire day. Now, occasionally, 4 hours or half a day will work, but as I said, it does take quite a commitment of time as well as energy to make sure that you can keep up with your judge. It's also sometimes helpful to get experience at a schooling show. That's excellent preparation because it's a little bit more laid-back atmosphere and gives you the experience that you need to take to the licensed shows. Before you even get to the show, you also want to make sure you check the weather and dress appropriately. There's nothing more miserable than being too hot or too cold, having the incorrect clothing for the weather. And as you know, many areas of the country, the weather changes throughout the day, so dressing in layers is also very useful. You also want to familiarize yourself with the USDF abbreviation for dressage tests. There are lots of ways to abbreviate, but there is a very nice list with USDF and their guide for scribes, and that's going to make your day a lot easier if you can use appropriate abbreviations rather than write out things like turn on the haunches or rein back or collection, engagement. Those are a lot of words that we will use over and over again. And although sometimes you may feel like you want to use a rubber stamp, it's helpful to know the abbreviation. Being able to have good handwriting is sometimes helpful for the competitor. But, of course, most of us, as we get older, tend to scribble a little bit. But making your comments that the judges give as legible as possible is very important. And then I want to make a comment also on writing down only what the judge gives you. Occasionally, a scribe tries to reinterpret for the judge or leaves out words that may be critical to the meaning that the judge had for the writer. So it's important to get down as much of the verbiage that the judge gives you. If you find that you're getting behind, you should go and make sure that the score is in the box and then come back when you can to finish the judge's comment. At the end of the test, it is the judge's responsibility to look at the test and make sure that there is a score in every box. But a really good scribe will look over it very briefly and hand it to the judge and say, you missed the score here or you missed the score there. And hopefully that doesn't happen very often. But the judge and the scribe really do work together to make sure that all the information gets down for the competitor in an appropriate manner. And at the end of the test, most judges will want to write their own further comments and collective marks. So it will be only occasionally that a judge will ask you to do that for them. So generally you're going to hand it to them, they'll make their collective scores and comments and sign the test. And again, judges are only human. So occasionally a judge will miss a signature and a really good scribe will say, please remember to sign it here. I just want to make a comment about errors. That is, if a rider goes off course. It is very important that the scribe does not take it upon themselves to write -2 or -4, as sometimes the scribe may make a mistake, and it is absolutely always the judge's responsibility to total up the errors. So if an error is made by the rider, the scribe should take the red pen and mark the word error under the remarks or under the directives of the test. And since it's in red or circled in red, that will draw attention to the judge to remember to bring total up the errors and bring it down at the end of the test. If there is a use of voice, In other words, the rider speaks to the horse or clucks. That's not considered an error of test, but the judge will penalize it. So at the judge's direction, they will usually tell you to write use of voice. So that is, again, not something that you write down -2 or -4 on. It's the judge's discretion how many points they take off. And generally, they will ask you to put a score in the box and then put an X through it and write the new score that they direct you to give. So just knowing these little tips will help make your day go easier and help you work as a partner with your judge to make sure that the riders get the most accurate and helpful information to help them improve upon their performances. A good scribe is absolutely a delight to work with and makes our job as a judge much easier and much more pleasant. So thank you for having me, Chris.
And listeners can find more information in the March issue of Connection Magazine, which features an article on this topic. And you can also find more information online at eTrack. Just search for Guide for Scribes and the Quick Study Scribe Training. This podcast is available on iTunes and at usdf.podbean.com. Visit eTrack, the USDF's online learning center and resource for dressage and equine education, for more information at usdf.org. The USDF is your connection to the American dressage community.